the distance between the circle of where you operate within your comfort zone to the bigger circle that you have stepped outside of your comfort zone, that distance in between is where the magic happens.
Yes.
The magic happens in the growth of yourself. You see that you can accomplish things. You start to create a sense of confidence that is wonderfully, wonderfully empowering, as well as definitely makes you feel really good about yourself. But it's that magic that happens. And I always say the magic happens when you step outside of your comfort zone and you continue to practice.
You couldn't be more right. And, you know, I often, you know, counsel my clients to understand that these are triumphs, right? Even though they may at the time look like they're small, they are triumphs. Hello, WTF friends, and welcome to Unscripted Pivots. Ever encounter an experience that left you shaking your head saying, WTF? You know, what the bleep? Sure, we all have. But what if you took that unscripted pivot and transformed it into a moment of empowerment? We are here to turn setbacks into setups. I'm Danielle Sproles, your host, certified executive coach, and creator of the WTF community, where WTF stands for Women That Flourish. This podcast is your spark, a place to awaken your potential, embrace unscripted changes, and step into your power with courage and passion. And like you, I've navigated life's unexpected turns and understand the power of starting anew. Each week, we'll share inspiring stories from women just like you, alongside insights from thought leaders and visionaries in business, spirituality, and creativity. So, are you ready to embody your WTF self and pursue what sets your soul on fire? Let's dive in. Today, we're going to say a big welcome to Beth Ann Catalano. Welcome, Beth Ann, to our podcast. We're so excited to have you. Let me tell the listeners a little bit about this powerhouse we've got here today. Beth Ann is the North American president and CEO of Ahava. Ahava, an Israeli brand, is the only cosmetics company that is indigenous to the Dead Sea region. She's a well-known beauty industry figure. She sure is. And Beth Ann formerly served as Senior Vice President of Sales, Administration, and Education at Steiner Leisure Corporation, also referred to as STNR, where she oversaw the Bliss, Elemis, Rumed portfolios. She was involved in reorganizing the brand's retail, wholesale, and third-party spa divisions and consistently overachieving profit and revenue expectations. She's a badass. Prior to this post, she co-founded the successful hair care startup, Jonathan Product, breaking numerous retail sales records and winning industry awards by executing a strategy utilized by reality TV. We're going to hear a bit about that, I hope, namely Bravo's blowout to market that brand. Her extensive industry experience also includes positions at Shiseido, LVMH Corporation, Unilever, and Lancome. Beth Ann is a transformational business leader and strategic executive, leveraging an impressive track record in the world of beauty and consumer packaged goods. I am so excited to have this conversation with you, Beth Ann. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Danielle. It's nice to be here and thank you for inviting me.
No, you know, it's so thrilling. And I've told our listeners before that a lot of the people that come on here as guests, these are women friends of friends. And this is how the ripple effect of my podcast has grown. And it's just something that I celebrate and it's gone beyond my expectations. So everybody knows out there, I have only had an opportunity to speak to Beth Ann once, just as a recall on what we would talk about a little bit. And I was just like smiling ear to ear as she was telling me her story. And I know that you guys are going to be wildly entertained and also very impressed by her track record. So I want to start with this, okay? Because we're on unscripted pivots, right? And this is all about what life happens to us when we're busy making other plans. One of the things that you've been quoted for, publicly quoted, is you said your darkest days are the ones that often bring you the most light, that this is when we have most light. I want you to begin the conversation by talking about when you first experienced that in your career or your personal life, and how you see that challenges are transformative and helpful, even though they might not be painless.
Well, I'm sure everybody has their own story of pain and success, but I truly believe that because I experienced something that was very unusual for me. When I was a young teenager, I was a bit overweight. I had very, very poor self-confidence as well as low self-esteem. And the last thing that I ever thought is that I would end up in the beauty industry. I mean, it just was so unusual for me to even think that way, because the way I saw myself was really not even near even being attractive. And what happened was I basically said, you're either going to do what you want to do in life or you're going to give up at it, and both is okay. And I was probably 17, 18 at that point in time. So I mustered up the courage in my little polyester suit. This was in the 70s.
Polyester was okay then. Please give us an error.
polyester was cool at that point. And I went into my local store, department store, which at that point was called the Denver Dry Goods in Boulder, Colorado. And I was in high school, and I forced myself up to the prettiest girl behind the counter in the beauty department. And I started nosing around. I walked around. I think they thought maybe I was looking to shoplift or something, because I was walking around so much looking at everything.
A little suspicious.
And then finally, the most beautiful girl, of course, comes walking over to me. And she says to me, you know, you look like you're interested in what's going on here. What can I do for you? And I just looked at her, and the only words that came out were the words that I live by now. And that is, I need your help. Can you help me?
Oh.
And I think that what most women do throughout their lives is that they see themselves as the helper. Yeah. And that it's very hard for us to learn to ask for help. And I realized through my entrepreneurial gig, the business that we owned with Jonathan Product, which we can talk about, and the corporate experiences, whether it be L'Oreal or which was Lancome, was part of L'Oreal and still is, whether it was Shiseido, which is a multi-billion dollar company, that the courage that you have is to ask for help. And it's not a needy type of help. It's the help where you really have exhausted the resources that you feel as though that really are part of you. And it's the way in which you ask for help. And it's the give back mentality. And it's your reputation. And it's your ability to try to pull the best out of people at all times. That is when people really are just dying to help you. And this girl behind the counter, she said to me, as she looked me up and down, polyester pantsuit and all, probably really bad makeup, she said to me, okay. And I was really, really taken in surprise. I probably thought I was going to cry. And what ended up there was that I was hired. I was behind the counter working for Clinique when Clinique was in its infancy. And from there, I started at the very, very bottom of the industry. And from that point forward, held every single rung on the ladder all the way up to where basically I am right now, which is a CEO. So it was a story of pride as well as, you know, courage. That and I pride myself a lot on courage, sometimes not even knowing what you're doing. You're just moving forward. And so that was not a dark area. That was a scary area.
You know, wait, I'm going to stop you right there. Everybody likes to just rush through their life. They don't even realize how magical they are. Before you move on, I just want to highlight that here you are, this, you know, young teenager, 17, 18 years old, and what started out a seed of self-doubt, okay, became transformed into self-acceptance, right? And that by having the courage to actually like raise your hand, get outside your comfort zone. I don't even like to talk about getting outside our comfort zone. I like to talk about expanding our comfort zone in those moments, because I like to consider it a sense of permanence, that once we try something and we do something, that we can actually do it again and know that we can, because we have evidence that we survived that moment. But you're absolutely right, Bethann, you know, asking for help and doing it in a, you know, in a respectful and strategic way. And by strategic, I mean, there's a point to it, right? You're not being lazy or indifferent, right? You recognize that you can't do it alone. That is probably one of the biggest messages that should be in like every topic that there is. So thank you so much, Bethann, for bringing that up, because it's such an important point. It really is. Okay, so we're moving on to the rock star.
But you know, I want to address one thing that you said, is that, you know, the term comfort zone is misunderstood and understood by many people in many different ways. Mm. I agree with you. I think that, you know, the comfort zone is where you basically operate day in, day out. It makes you feel okay. You don't have to be too brave. You just have to get up in the morning and work through what you do.
Yeah.
And then there's that step outside of your comfort zone, which is that trying and doing and bravery and all those wonderful things that you mentioned. However, I always have looked at it, and I've also read this also, is that the distance between the circle of where you operate within your comfort zone to the bigger circle that you have stepped outside of your comfort zone, the distance between the one circle inside and the larger circle on the outside, that distance in between is where the magic happens.
Yes.
The magic happens in the growth of yourself. You see that you can accomplish things. You start to create a sense of confidence that is wonderfully, wonderfully empowering, as well as definitely makes you feel really good about yourself. But it's that magic that happens. And I always say the magic happens when you step outside of your comfort zone and you continue to practice.
You couldn't be more right. And, you know, I often, you know, counsel my clients to understand that these are triumphs, right? Even though they may at the time look like they're small, they are triumphs. And, you know, to your point, they're empowering. And it is so important for women to have those moments to recognize and celebrate them, because it elevates our self-esteem. And more often than not, we are defining our beauty and who we are by the way we look in the mirror. And that is so, so short-sighted. Now, you've been in the beauty industry for decades now, and you're the CEO of North America of a huge brand. I mean, kudos to you, sister, right? I mean, that's magnificent. So you have seen so much about beauty and how beauty has evolved, and we'll get that later, like just the standards that there are today. But let me just bring you back to you were the teenager, you had the courage to ask for help. All of a sudden, you're working in the beauty industry. And tell us a little bit about how that morphed into something as crazy as being on reality TV, which I don't think was on your vision board,
no.
You know, and it was like, let's talk about the unscripted pivots and how you had the courage to kind of divert from what you consider to be your path.
Well, I went to college and I stayed in college and was, you know, I was in a sorority. I was an officer in a sorority, like June. My girlfriend, June.
Our girlfriend, June.
Our girlfriend.
Let's just take a pause and give a shout out to June Bardwell. I mean, she's like unbelievable, and she's a very long time good friend of Beth Ann's. They were roommates in college, and we did have June on the podcast a couple of episodes ago. So shout out to June Bardwell. She's with Planet, and she also is the founder of her own brand, her own beauty brand called Pure June Life. She has the most magnificent toner, and I've talked about it before, and I'll tell you again. I'm putting that in the show notes, ladies, because you need this stuff. Okay, Beth Ann.
And by the way, her Pure June Life, it's not just a toner. It's an essence, which is
a completely different level
of quality ingredients. So shout out to wonderful June. Anyhow, I was in the industry. I was able to be in the right place at the right time. I was willing to work. I put my heart and soul. It was my life. I didn't date. I didn't do the things to have a balanced life. I didn't date. I didn't have boyfriends. I didn't, you know, go to parties with girlfriends, etc. I either worked or I studied on how to do something better than I was already doing and how to be the best account executive. I was hired by a little brand at that time called Chanel. And Chanel only had fragrance. Yeah, really. And Chanel, but truly Chanel, they had fragrances. They were enormous with fragrances, which I still love their fragrance. However, they had just started a cosmetic skincare line.
Okay.
So now it's a very big part of their portfolio. However, at that point in time, they didn't have any skincare cosmetics. And I don't know, with my probably not so polyester, but still had a blend of polyester suit I was wearing at that time, probably 1920. I was 20 at that time. found somebody and convinced somebody that I need to be the account executive for Chanel Beauty that represented Neiman Marcus and represented, you know, other specialty stores, because that was the only place that it was launched. I was at that point living in Dallas, Texas. And so once again, not having necessarily the perfect image to go to a Neiman Marcus and speak to the buyer and so on, I will never forget when I walked in my little suit, my little, you know, briefcase. And I said, I'm your Chanel Beauty account executive. She looked me up and down, that one thing up and down again, and looked at me, and exact words were, they have sent me you. And that was like one of the things that I looked at and I said, yeah, they did. And you know what? This woman became my mentor. It was just wonderful, wonderful how this also happened.
Okay. Wait a second. We're taking another pause because you're plowing through it. And I just want to say to you a couple of things. One, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you were focused on your job and, you know, all the things that you were doing in the industry, you're climbing that ladder and that you weren't dating. So I have a couple of questions about that. One was, were you resisting dating? Like, were you so focused that you actually had the, I don't know, the discipline that it takes not to get distracted by having a romantic relationship? Did you consider that a possible downfall, or nobody really caught your eye? Like, I want to know about that, because that's where a lot of women go sideways, including myself. Okay. You know, we fall in love and then all of a sudden we're not on a career track. That's why I want to ask you about this.
I think that came for me a little bit later, but at this point in time, I was just so completely deeply focused on being the best at what I could be. I had so much to learn. I knew that I was not someone that had experience. I knew that I needed to do a lot of things to be able to continue to participate in this world of beauty, and particularly the business of beauty, not just being pretty, but it's the business of beauty. I just didn't. It was the former, not the latter.
The reason this is remarkable is that today that probably wouldn't seem like such an accomplishment, right? But, you know, at the time that you were doing it, there were probably more women that were actually getting married and starting families early and whatnot. That was probably the norm. So you really were, from a very early age, working outside the norm. And I love that you had the gumption to go into these arenas, we'll call them arenas, knowing that you would be getting that second sideways glance, like, you, is it like they sent me you, and you stood in your own nonetheless, right? And how good is that?
Yeah, I didn't have a choice, Danielle. I didn't have terribly supportive parents. I think they would have preferred that I did get married. When I graduated from college, if you weren't engaged, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, it's a different time.
And to do what we were doing, and yourself, I'm sure, was there at that point also. But what I was doing was something that people, you know, my girlfriends thought I was just obsessed. They thought that, you know, I wasn't interested in dating because, you know what, I was too good for anyone, that I felt that I was too good for it, which was absolutely positively not the case. It was just that I was so deeply focused on accomplishing a goal. And that was, you know, to go to the next step. The Japanese have something very cool, and they call it the principle of Kaizen. And if, you know, the principle of Kaizen is taking one step of the ladder, perfecting it, then going to the next step of the ladder and perfecting it, and on and on and on from bottom. Obviously, you start at the bottom, and then the ladder can never end. And so someone had shared that with me, and I found it really inspirational, and maybe took it to heart a little bit too much, but I just was, you know, learning everything I could at that rung, and then looking for the opportunity to take the next step on the ladder. And that was my game plan, whether I knew it really on the top of mind, or, you know, it was subconscious, I'm not sure. But that is the way that I worked the plan. And I was fortunate enough to get this job at Chanel and stayed there, and then went on to another company that was called La Prairie, and it's still around. It's a beautiful skincare line. And so building, you know, that arsenal of different companies and different experiences, but each time taking that step to the next rung of the ladder.
And relationship building, Beth Ann, the relationships that you were building along the way were very powerful and influential. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I found myself, you know, when you strive and you reach for the stars, you put yourself up there with, I wouldn't say the gods, but you put yourself up there with the clouds. You're no longer really operating on the ground. And so the responsibility is to make sure that the relationships develop appropriately and that you're present. I was always present. I never went into a meeting not prepared. I never went into a meeting where, you know, I won't say that I knew the answers at every single meeting, which was absolutely not the truth, but I was ready and prepared to find out what the answer would need to be. I was just front and center, always sat in the front row, that kind of person. And no one ever stopped me. I found it really interesting. I didn't see other women trying to push me out. I didn't see that. I felt as though that there was more, maybe if they just saw how determined I was and didn't want to get in my way. I'm not sure what it was, but I never felt that there was a competitiveness with other people that, you know, that I came to.
You know, let me just say this. It sounds to me, and I mean, we just only met, that you had, despite the odds, because you started this whole thing out with, like, you know, you thought you were overweight and you were being self-critical at a very young age. But what happened really fast for you as you entered adulthood was a sense of self-acceptance. And I think that when we accept ourselves, which is so critical, it really, really is, that people around us almost don't know what to make about it. And they get comfortable with us because we're comfortable with us. We're not trying to prove anything. And there is an authenticity in that state of mind, right? So exactly. I think your authenticity really resonated with people and, you know, brought you in. And you know, that became like the ladder, you know, that you just made each rung as powerful as they were.
You're right. You're right. And I just was me. I didn't know how to be somebody else. And I wasn't really focused on being somebody else because I was just focused on keeping moving. There is one thing too, though, that is required. And I learned this later in life. And excuse me, when I went back and looked at my life, I realized that I was very fortunate to just intuitively know this. I can honestly say to you, Danielle, that I have never, ever been jealous of anyone in my life. Mm. I've been envious. I've been envious that maybe someone had more free time, or envious that someone was 6'2", blonde haired, blue eyes, and absolutely was, you know, tan all day long. I, you know, there's an envy that goes there, but I have never been jealous of someone because I feel like everybody has their own gifts and it's up to yourself to really, you know, make those gifts come alive. And I just don't believe that being jealous can do anything.
I agree with you so much. And there can be a lot of jealousy, especially among females, right? Mm-hmm. And just in general, I'll say this. If I see that somebody has something that I want, now I can't be 6'2" or blonde, and I'd like longer legs, you know, for sure. However, whenever I see something that somebody has, whether it's an accomplishment or, you know, a style or whatever, all I know is that that is the universe showing me something that I can work towards for myself. Nobody has all the stuff. Nobody does, right? So if there's something that grabs my attention, it doesn't mean that it's grabbing your attention. And sometimes it comes in the form of an emotion like envy, like, you know, I want that too. So if I envy, you know, I have some friends, women friends who have recently been writing books and whatnot. And so there was a sense of envy, but all that means is that it's something that I want to do. So when I get those emotions, which I would have considered to be toxic by nature, I go, aha, wow, look at that. That's really a source of inspiration. They're inspiring you to do something. So if you feel that they have it and you want it, go get your own.
Absolutely.
You know, nobody wrote all the books, you know? And so I'm working on a book right now, but I love how you distinguish between the two things. So there's a place for envy and it can be, you know, a positive way when it's channeled correctly and we're not trying to judge or take somebody else down.
I recently just started an Instagram, learning how to work with Instagram all the time and posting every day. Mm-hmm. And this was a very scary thing for me because I'm of the age group that, you know, first of all, you never gave away anything in terms of your information. You know, our generation, it's different. Hid everything, you know, we hid it.
Yeah.
So to really break through that. Plus, the other thing is you have to film yourself all the time. So that was also a little bit of a hesitation on my part because I'm the kind of person that I'd rather... I don't want to be the basketball star on the floor. I'd rather own the team than be the star. So I'm a little bit behind the scenes type person.
It's a better position, my friend.
But I started this Instagram and started posting reels about, and my name is Beauty Before Age. And it's really about how women, when you get to the age of 50, sometimes you start trying to be invisible. You know, you're starting that downward trend. You don't see yourself. You know, you still want to see yourself like you're 30, 35. You're not enjoying your beauty at all. You probably have not enjoyed your beauty for several years. And so this is a message of talking about good habits, but it's really talking about how enjoying your beauty is a skill that you have to develop like a muscle.
Yes.
You know, it has to be worked. It has to be admired. It has to be a goal and you can't let yourself stop. But anyhow, I think that, you know, going back to the dark one, which was originally your first question, is the dark days. I got to a point in my career where I was the acting general manager of Guerlain, which the Chalamar fragrance, most a lot of people know the Chalamar.
Sure.
And then a beautiful French company. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's skincare and that sort of thing. And this was in the early 1999 through like 2002. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a general manager. And at that point in time, I was just a little bit over 40. And so I was like saying to myself, okay, this is it. What do I do next? And as the universe hands you, you know, the details, I was let go. I was let go. Yeah. And I had never been let go of a job before. And the reason I was let go is because they were downsizing and taking, this was part of the LVMH, Louis Vuitton Corporation. And they were taking Christian Dior, Givenchy, which was also fragrances, and Guerlain, and making them one division for cost-cutting measures. And this is in the early 2000s. And all of a sudden, I was like, I don't have a job. You know, and it was one of those things where I am married, I have a small child, there's, you know, a future here that I have to also prepare for financially, and didn't know what to do. And I went through probably 2.5 months of the worst time, one of the worst times I've had in my life, not knowing what to do, not knowing what tomorrow was going to bring, and feeling like I was 40, early 40s, and my career was over. And I truly started to believe that. But then, you know what? I'm also a person that I feel I'm very blessed in the sense that I've been given opportunities and have had the foresight to be open enough to see them. And this is when everything completely changed in my life. And the light started to shine slowly, like opening up a door that, you know, you just have a crack and then you open a little bit more. And it's your responsibility to hang onto the doorknob and jerk it open and go through that door. And what happened was, is that this is when the reality star, Jonathan, who was, you know, he was, I call him reality star, and he was a reality star truly. And this was 2004 when reality TV was nothing. There were four shows on TV. Blowout was our show, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, The Apprentice, and Survivor. Those were the four shows. There was a little tiny cable channel called the Bravo Channel, which now everyone knows that the Bravo Channel is the gold standard for housewives in reality.
Yeah.
Andy Cohen was running around New York City trying to get attention. And, you know, and I actually really always liked him because I thought he was funny, but he certainly has done himself really well. Yeah. Nevertheless, Jonathan was this hairstylist in West Hollywood. And he just happened to be in the right place himself, came from a family of actors and so on. His sister started the Pussycat Dolls, Robin Anton. Long history of that, a Hollywood family, but not him. He was a hairstylist. And so I believe he still is. And what happened was, is that his manager called someone that I, you know, knew, and she was a marketer. She called me up. She goes, I just got this crazy call from this manager from this thing called reality TV star named Jonathan. Have you ever heard of him? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, are you doing anything right now that you can't live without job wise? And I said, boy, have you hit me at the right time. So, you know, packed it all up. And the next day I walked downstairs in my house and my husband and daughter, and she was like probably 7 or 8 at that time. They're yelling at the TV. And all I can hear her say is, I love Jonathan. I hate Jonathan. I love Jonathan. I hate Jonathan. This is what went on. And my husband is like watching it very intently. And I walked downstairs and I said, what are you doing? What are you watching? They said, we're watching this show called Blowout with this guy named Jonathan. And that was the first time that I realized that, you know, regular people, even, you know, an 8-year-old could watch this and have some fun in experiencing in a voyeur sort of way, somebody else's life and how they've lived it. And that's what reality TV is about.
Okay. I got to wait 1 second here. So this is so cool because all of a sudden you had this epiphany like, wow, this is actually relatable like to everybody. And so from the business perspective, because you are very business minded, I mean, you just said that you rather own the team than be the basketball team, which says volumes about you in a good way, Bethann. But I just want to point out too that so much in life, which looks initially like a rejection, whether it's from, you know, okay, we're downsizing, we no longer need your services, thank you, we'll take care of you with the severance, but, you know, we're letting you go, or, you know, a rejection from in a relationship from a partner, you know, rejections when they come. You know, I'm always encouraging not only myself to be reminded of this, but the women that I coach is that a rejection is often a redirection. Right. And it may not be overnight, but it becomes very clear to us soon enough why those changes were done. You know, they weren't scripted by us. They weren't part of our plan. But that pivot offers a lot of promise. So bring us back. You're going to this meeting. You're going to now be part of Bravo and the Jonathan Pop product. Tell me about it.
And of course, knew nothing about what we were doing. So my girlfriend and I, she's a marketer, I'm a business person. We got together. We met with him. We flew to California. We met with his manager as well as Jonathan. And he had no money. He had no formulas. He had no product. He had none, but he had a TV show. And the first season of his TV show was all about him in his salon and, you know, his stylist and fighting and screaming and yelling and all that kind of stuff. But it was very, very popular. And so my girlfriend and I, Tina, we sat down and we developed the first sulfate-free shampoo. We developed 8 hair products that were to be sold in retail distribution, like a Sephora, like an Ulta, that sort of thing, not in salons. And we also created a product, which is a pomade, and it was called Dirt, D-I-R-T, yes, Dirt for your hair.
Hair product called Dirt.
Okay. Which still gives second day texture to clean hair.
Okay.
So sometimes when your hair is really clean, it's very unmanageable. So if you take the pomade and you use your fingertips to really fluff and that sort of thing, it gives that second day texture that is much more manageable. We went out, we raised $1 million in 5 weeks.
Wait, hold the phone. Hold the phone. Okay. Wait.
That was fun. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
we just did this. Okay. Tell the women that are listening out there, where did you get the idea that you should start getting an investor? And like, how did you have the courage to do that? And where did you go first? I mean, family and friends? Like, all of a sudden you said,
we
need some money.
No. Yeah. No. Well, when you don't have any money and you need it, you kind of figure out you need to find somebody who's going to help you. And this was back to lesson one, asking for help. We put our heads together, and I have to give Tina a lot of credit for this. There are people out there called contract manufacturers, and they manufacture turnkey products. And we went to a contract manufacturer who she was familiar with, as she had worked for L'Oreal, and they largely did hair products. And the man that owned the company was a Renaissance kind of generational German, very wealthy man. And he had this company that, you know, created hair products. And so we approached him, his manager, and eventually him. We went to Ireland and visit with him. And he thought it was kind of sexy, you know, having a hair care line, and he was going to meet a bunch of models and all this kind of stuff. We were like, oh yeah, that's exactly what happens. And he told us that he would give us, he liked the idea. He liked the business plan that we put together. You know, we did all of the things that corporate America has taught us to do in terms of presentation, business planning, et cetera. So that came in really handy. And then we convinced him that we needed money, but we were looking for more money than he was willing to spend. So he said he would give us $1 million. And we had 6 months to achieve $5 million in sales. And if in fact, we did not, then there would be no more money. And that would be that. And we were like, okay, that's fine. We thought that was better than zero.
Look at you. Yeah.
We did. And I think my husband says this to me, Danielle, and his father, bless his heart, he said this to me also, time and time again. He says, Bethann, you really have a clear head. And they're very Italian, and they come from this, you know, different type of culture than I. And I'm like, what do you mean I have a clear head? I always took that a little bit like somewhat like maybe slightly it was criticism, but it wasn't. What they meant is I don't fill my head with things that are not necessary at that time, like the idea of failure. It just doesn't appear to me, you know?
It's a blessing.
Yeah, that's kind of an end result, and you'll find out if you failed down the road. But right now, staying with the moment, there's so many twists and turns and so many different things that you can take a negative and turn it into a positive business experience. He gave us $1 million, which was a wonderful, generous gift. And we ended up doing $30 million in 18 months.
$30 million in 18 months.
And the question is, how did that happen? I'm sure. Well, we used the TV show as, in fact, we were the first kind of reality girls on TV. We used the show to showcase how we would sit down and name products, or how we would go to the lab and see the formulas, or how we would deliver products. And I was in a Sephora meeting, and we sold it into Sephora full distribution. That was our launch partner. And we actually went on QVC. Jonathan was doing on QVC, but Bravo, who was filming us, filmed us on QVC and dropped it into this TV show. And because by the grace of God, there was not a lot of content or product in the reality TV world at that point in time, the same shows played over and over and over and over. And I measured in a 3-month period of time, we had 75 hours of our show.
Wow.
And we would film 8 to 10 episodes for a season. And then that would be it. And then you could just see the sales go like this. They just kept on going.
And were you just like being yourself, or did they ask you to be a different kind of persona, or was this really just real reality? Your personalities were what they were. I mean, was there a lot of transparency?
By early morning, we would get up. We lived in this little boutique hotel in Beverly Hills. We would be running a business. We would be naming products. We'd be getting patents. I'd be like trying to sell more product. All this would happen. This beautiful little tiny boutique hotel turned its living room area and its dining room into our office for us because we were there so much. They were just wonderful. And we then would get dressed, do our own makeup, do our own hair, do our own styling, and show up wherever we were filming that day. And then we would film. And there was no script. In fact, the FTC at that point in time would fine you if you were rehearsing and doing things like that. We were paid zero. We did not make any money whatsoever, but we used it as our marketing vehicle, which could not have been a better marketing vehicle. Cable television, you know, very juicy drama. And every single hairstylist in the United States saw this program, was talking about the program. And I do think that most hairstylists that own salons are not, they believe that they can start their own brand and they want their own brand, usually with their name on it. So they could see that Jonathan was doing this and he was very aspirational and iconic to them. And it gave them this motivation to think that they could then also be successful. And hopefully many of them were. But they were our fan base. And because there were there's such a large voice with that group, they were a huge, huge fan base for us. And so, you know, we would be written up in magazines. I think we're in the University of Chicago Business School as a case study way back. You know, like this is now 2005, 2006.
That is just so cool. What a pivot that was, right? Yeah. And then how did that wrap up? And then you get on with your executive journey. How did this all happen?
I think part of being a good adult is realizing when things are not necessarily as they should be any longer. And unlike so many of us that are not celebrities in our own mind, a celebrity sometimes can become, you know, just a very difficult person to work with. Okay. And that is what had started to happen, is we could see that the show was not taking off any further, because here's this authentic person who was riding around and come, you know, like some car that, you know, was not a prestigious car, going into his salons, cutting hair, you know, visiting with us and creating products, you know, real grassroots, real authentic. And then all of a sudden, all of this notoriety, all of this money, everything completely changed. And
hey, hold on. I never saw this show, but this is what I'll say about that. That's a real good life lesson, what you're sharing right now about how things can, like, you know, morph into something that they'd never start. What they were celebrated for in the beginning isn't what sticks later on. And that's why it fails, right? This happens in marriages. This happens in businesses. And, things become like unrecognizable. And so the season, and I'm, no pun intended, has passed. There's like an expiration date to it, because what made it so magical no longer exist once the wealth and the fame and the notoriety came.
Correct.
Right. So that's really interesting.
And we were very interested in keeping the course, because there was all this distribution that was just dying to get our products. We were still exclusive at Sephora and doing enormous numbers with them. And, you know, Ulta was coming to us and all these other things. And we were ready to, you know, go to the next level. And having an investor that owned a contract manufacturing facility was brilliant in the end, that we went that route. Again, didn't really know it was brilliance at that point, because he could stop manufacturing all the other products and really, you know, step it up in manufacturing that we needed. So we never had out of stocks. We had no supply problems, which with most you know, most businesses, especially small businesses, that's probably their number one, two problem is being able to afford inventory and to be able to time forecasting and inventory delivery so that, you know, you can continue to supply and obviously sell your product. But mm-hmm. we did not have that problem because we had a gentleman that had his own facility and really was liking what was happening. He was able to make money on his investment, plus he was also making a markup on all the contract manufacturing. So he was double dipping in a good way. He was getting to double dip into the profits where the rest of us were, you know, working, and I owned part of the company. We were equity partners in the company too. There were four of us. And as you asked, and you were so correct, it had bet its match and it was time to move on. And we sold, both Jane and I sold our interest in the company back to the investor who was wanting to buy it back from us. And once we left, and it breaks my heart, honestly, I don't have any sour grapes or any type of feeling other than terrible, terrible feeling of it's almost like your child failed when you abandoned them. And we moved on, and they did not have an infrastructure that was ready to replace what we were doing. And so the mm-hmm. brand ended up going out of Sephora and going into drugstore distribution, and then eventually it's no longer in existence. So okay. it's the life cycle of a brand too.
Well, it also had its season. Yeah. And you've seen so much of this in the beauty industry. I mean, certainly there's some yes. really larger brands that you've worked with that, you know, have just continued to evolve and change and offer more things, or maybe even dial it back depending upon what is successfully, you know, embraced or not by the public. But tell me a little bit about today. Here you are, the CEO of Ahava for North America. And what have you witnessed over the course of your career in terms of what beauty standards are? Like, have you seen a lot of evolution when it comes to the products that are being made or offered, or even more than that, marketed, right? Because I think I can remember my first moment of awareness when I think about like commercials and whatnot, it was really led by the Dove brand. Like all of a sudden you didn't have to be a size 4. You didn't have to be mm-hmm. white. You didn't have to be blonde. You know, they had this whole movement where they're like, we're recognizing beauty for what beauty really is. And I don't know, maybe that was a decade ago, but that was like, for me, just as the consumer, the first like awareness that something was not going to have to look picture perfect, or what is picture perfect? Like, let's redefine that. We're not saying mm-hmm. like everybody's exactly. less than. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I did an episode on beauty standards and like how we can get so consumed, because you even mentioned, right, now that you're doing a lot of Instagram and everything's about reels, I'm doing that too. And I'm doing a lot of TikTok right now, and I have to see myself. And you know what? I just laughed. But then I think it's much easier because, look, I'm at mile marker 59. I'll be 60 in August. And if you would have asked me how I would have felt about that 20 years ago, I'd have been like, not going to like it. I'm not. That's going to make me sad, you know, because as I approached 50, I'm like, 50's not old. And then when I was 55, I'm like, but 60's going to be, right? And I will tell you, I am there at its doorstep and I don't feel old. I feel happy. I am joyous. Like everything is good. But I take the time to live in gratitude, self-acceptance, which obviously is a huge part of your story, right? And recognizing the triumphs in our career and in our personal lives, and just having a lot of value for them, right? And I think that when we do that, we can't really slip into all that self-pity of like, oh, I don't look the way I used to look, or this or that. Like, hell's bells, man. We're in the lead. I just did an Instagram story about that. Like, you know, don't talk about your years. People are like, how old are you? I don't talk, well, I mean, yes, I'm 59. I'm not embarrassed. But I say I'm at mile marker 59. And what that means is that I'm in the lead, sister. Okay? You're 40. If we're having a race, I'm ahead of you. Okay?
Yes, exactly.
And you're coming up from behind. Like, you know, we're going in the same direction. So I don't get caught up in any of that. But that's also because, you know, I mean, I have gratitude. I look at what I have and not so much what I don't. Not to say I won't go buy the beauty products and all the things that come with improving my self-image, because we feel better when we look a certain way. But self-love, self-acceptance. So tell me a little bit about how that has been for you, right? Because you're not 25 anymore either. And also what you've seen with the beauty business, you know, and the evolution of that for women.
I think there's things that have changed drastically. And I think there's the same things that they were when I started in the industry. So you have a mm-hmm. mixture of both, and I'll break it down a bit. Anti-aging is the number one category of all skincare. You know, and anti-aging is a negative word in itself. Anti-aging. You know, you can look at it as positive, like you can look at it as negative. I don't particularly care for the term whatsoever. I think, you know, pro-aging is something that's much more realistic. You're right. I'm certainly not 25. I'm your contemporary and older.
Yeah.
And do I like, you know, getting older? I see things changing. I try very hard to embrace them. But I can tell you that I don't look at myself as being less. I look at myself as being richer, fuller. I have different gifts to offer than I did even 10 years ago. You're absolutely right. It was a decade ago with the Dove ad, which I know exactly what you're talking about, the self-acceptance and some of the women in their lingerie and showing that they had tummies and things like that, that we all do in our, and some more so than the other. You know, I just think that it's a really interesting time in beauty, because with your TikToks and your Instagrams and things like that, it's really driving the attention of the industry to the very, very young. And I'm not talking about millennials. I'm talking about Gen Z. If you look on TikTok, you're looking at mainly millennials that are producing on, you know, their own feed. And I don't know about you, but I am obsessed with TikTok. I'm obsessed with it because of the way that it moves, the real, you know, the real authenticity that you can have. There's lots of filters, you know, and you can see who knows what they're doing and what who's not.
Yes, exactly. Those filters are there. You better follow me on TikTok. I just hit 5,000. I just started doing TikTok a couple months ago.
Good.
And I hit 5K. And you're right. Okay. First of all, I think there's 5.5 billion people on TikTok, right? But it's just another platform for visibility. And why am I doing it? I'm doing it because the more women that I could reach that want to listen to my podcast or understand what my brand is, as I now coin myself as the WTF lady, WTF meaning women that flourish.
I love that.
You know, I legally trademarked it, WTF. So when we're having our WTF moments, which we're having, right, we're going to get those. I want women to reset and say, okay, WTF, women, I'm a woman that flourishes, WTF. And to reset, regain her power, and to know in that moment that she's going to be okay. I am super passionate about that. So Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever I can keep up as a entrepreneur, like now left corporate America. Yeah, it takes me a minute because this is right now, this is Danielle, party you want. I hope when we're talking in 5 years, I'll be like, yeah, well, my staff is doing this. Like right now, it's like, what can I produce on the fly alone? And
exactly.
A lot of it's extremely authentic, and I'm very silly on there. So when you do, you don't know me well enough to know how corporate America and buttoned up I can be. I'm playful, but I'm also very serious and very intelligent. And when you see me on TikTok, you'd be like, who is this chick? Like
I cannot wait to watch you this evening because I haven't stretched myself to TikTok yet. I've just been watching and studying and really looking to see what works, what doesn't, how long is your engagement, so on and so on. Not you individually, but one's engagement.
No, I know. You have to have a bit. Well, you're, because you are a business person, so I get it. And I am studying it as well in terms of making money, right, through that platform. I have three very, very close friends here in Orange County that are crushing it. They have full-time jobs, but on TikTok, and they have very, very different platforms, and they are making really nice side money through that platform with their authenticity, and they're not perfect people. And so they're just great women. And so that's why I'm pursuing that. It's not because I have extra time on my hands. I don't. But Instagram, YouTube, all these things. But to your point, going back to Bravo TV, who would even have thought that something like that was going to give you the platform that it did for that product? So how many influencers are you using for the Ahava? Are they using influencers to brand that, or?
We use organic and non-organic. So in other words, we hire people to be influencers. But then, you know, Ahava is an Israeli brand. So there's different groups that really follow Israeli brands and other cultural type of brands.
Sure.
We are the sweetheart brand of Israel. When you go to Israel, you see us everywhere. I love the brand because I think the products are the real deal. I've worked for brands before where they weren't just right for me, but maybe the brand also wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
One of the things about being my age and looking very, very objectively at what our company does, I still think that what companies feel that they have to do, moreover, and there's some that have, you know, ventured outside of it, but not enormously. And that's sure. still used the model that's under 25 years old. And mm-hmm. I don't know any woman in her 50s and 60s who wants to be told how to treat her skin or how to look better by someone that is under the age of 25. There's just no ability to relate to what the issues
exactly.
are, you know, and I think that skincare and cosmetic companies still do that. And I think it's my number one criticism of all companies is that, you know, you're not really speaking to, you're talking about anti-aging, but you've got a 25-year-old. Yes. Okay. They like to anti-age at 25 and do Botox at 14 and so on now. Okay, great. But the real money and the real business is within people that are 45 plus. And so I don't think that the companies speak necessarily always the right way to this customer, or they would be talking more about things that you and I are talking about. You know, I'm talking about enjoying your beauty. I'm talking about how it looks different at 50 than it did at 30, and how at 60 it looks different than it's 50. Companies aren't talking about that. You know, they're really just telling you why their product is right for you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and certainly with the brands that you have aligned yourself with, very high end, you probably don't see it as much. I will tell you though, and I know this firsthand, secondhand, because I'm not doing it yet. I'm eligible to do it. There is a huge market for UGC, user generated content, for women our age or for men our age. Huge, huge market, because there are less people in our category that are comfortable with doing that or are mm-hmm. even interested in doing it. So to yes. your point earlier with the Bravo TV, there wasn't a lot of Bravo TV going on. It wasn't like you could turn into 30 channels. This was a very new concept, right? And UGC has been around for, you know, several years, but it really has gained some traction. But it's like the young kids who are comfortable with all the tech pieces of that and the visibility of that, right? Our age is not so much the case. So there is a real spot for us because there's not enough candidates for the age group, the 50-year-old, the 60-year-old woman to be talking about this kind of stuff. But you do see it on TikTok. So if you're really into TikTok, TikTok is like anything else. It's like Instagram or Facebook. You're going to be populating whatever you assign to. TikTok has that algorithm and it knows what you want to look at. And so they're going to give more of it to you, right? So I do. I follow a lot of women that are, what's the positive thing? We don't want to say a mature woman. What do we want to say? An evolved woman.
Experienced, yes.
An experienced woman. Yeah.
You know what? I recognize that deficit within my skill set of understanding how to do post reels, the mechanics mm-hmm. of it, the technology of it, the strategy of it, the captions, the hooks, all the things that go into making that a business. And I'm not looking to make a business out of it. I'm looking for a message of help. I'm yes. looking to give back all the gifts that I was given and to try to help others feel less invisible and feel good about what they're doing and what they're saying. But regardless, you know, I think that my answer to that, and not everyone has the ability to do this, I totally understand it, is I hired a 33-year-old social media coach who is an mm-hmm. absolute expert at this, who posts every single day for her business. And I was referred to her and I have now started working with her in she's amazing. And it's not such a big science. It's not hard to learn. It's not like learning how to create an atom bomb. You know, it's really more about understanding and streamlining your time. You know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, Beth Ann, here it is again. The reason you're so wildly successful and the reason that you're so comfortable with yourself is because you have that gift of asking for help. You know when you are going to be outside of like your experience. Doesn't mean you're less than, mm-hmm. you're not less relevant or less smart or less anything. You just haven't been exposed to that piece. And you're smart enough to say, I don't really know it, but I'll find somebody who does and align yourself. And you know what? This is so good because, and I encourage women to look for that even within a female community. I think that you referenced, is your social media person woman? Is she? Okay, great.
Young woman.
Yeah,
young woman.
Nothing wrong with the guys out there. I mean, you know, I'm married to a guy. I love guys. I have three sons, right? But I do make it a point to hire a woman when given the chance. Like, all things being equal, if there's a male or female, I'm going to give that job or that opportunity to the woman. I just am. Kind of like we got the girls club. They've had the boys club for a long time. And, you know, it's not at the exclusion of, but I do like to recognize that some women who are out there that are talented and can give me help, that's what I'm going to do. You are so incredible. We could talk for hours, but this podcast isn't. I mean, can we get you back on for like a part two? Because I would like to do a deeper dive into some of the things that, where this direction of this conversation is going. I think it's very important. And I'm really just, I'm so happy that I met you. You know, kudos to our friend June Bardwell. Everybody out there, go get Pure Essence. You can find, I'm going to put June's contact information in the show notes, you know, along obviously with Beth Ann being our guest. But there's, you know what, it's just the ripple effect of the women that we get to meet and the building of relationships when we are being intentional.
Yes, intentional is a good word. That's a yes. Good word. It's a good action word. And I would ask that, again, I am not looking to monetize my social media. No, I am not. I have a full-time job. I'm looking to take 30 years worth of beauty experience and just share it with people that don't, particularly women, that don't understand what they need to do at this point in their life. And that's why I called it Beauty Before Age. That's why my name is that. And so I think that I'm very happy to come back at your request. I really am thrilled that you invited me as a guest. I think this is something that we could do some, you know, maybe even a part three once we get to some of these deeper issues.
I absolutely do. And we'll chat about it offline. But I'm thinking part two, since we're almost like wrapping it up at this thing, is like, I'll dive into your social media piece. You'll dive into mine. And we'll talk about being the age that we are and getting comfortable with an unfamiliar space, because we're like perfect at so many other things because we've been doing them in our sleep for decades, right? And then just this new way of doing it and what it means to us to get messages out there and to share and empower other women, you know, within the community. That's like a big deal. That's a big deal. And even just the nuances of what we learned on how to do it. I have a lot of friends that say, Danielle, how'd you get that little video going? I'm like, did you ever hear a cap cut? Well, you know, I have a 25-year-old daughter that taught me. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, you know, if you have kids, people, and they still like you and you like them, talk to them because they know how to do this stuff, okay? Okay? You remind them that you taught them how to use a spoon, okay? They can teach you some tech stuff on the phone.
Such a good point, Danielle. Such a good point, yes.
There's a big world out there.
Yes,
so on that note, I'm going to say, what a pleasure. You will be back. This was just so great. And I can't wait to meet you in person, okay? This is like,
well,
I'm
in New York, so I'll be on, but I do come to the West Coast at least three or four times a year. I have a lot of business out there. So yes, we will be the first on my list to socialize and to meet.
I'll probably get to you before you get to me. My son's in New York and I worked in New York for 18 years. I don't even know if you even knew that. So no, I'm from Jersey. I'm not from California. So everybody's on that side of the fence. So I'll probably be in your neck of the woods sooner than not. Beth Ann, thank you so much for, you know, just sharing your experience and entertaining us and inspiring us with self-acceptance, with the importance of asking for help. Okay, never, ever underestimate raise your hand. That is a sign of strength, not weakness. I thank you for that, Beth Ann. See you soon.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning into Unscripted Pivots and joining the WTF Women That Flourish community today. And when your next WTF moment hits, remember this, you are built to flourish. Please help spread the word, share this episode, and if it inspired you, a 5-star review would mean the world to me. It's a powerful way to help us reach more people just like you. In the show notes, you will find all guest information. And if you're thinking about working with a coach, I'd love to hear from you. My website is unscriptedpivots.com. There you will find not only my calendar, but WTF highlights and resources designed to empower you. Until next time, face challenges head on, knowing you're meant to flourish through every pivot. See you soon.